I'm John Strum, and this is a Real Talk MS Ectrums Extra conversation. I'm at Ectrums 2023 in Milan, and I'm speaking with Dr. Daniel Antoneda, a neurologist at Cleveland Clinic. And Dr. Antoneda is here co-chairing a scientific session on artificial intelligence in MS. Thanks for joining me, Dr. Antoneda.
Thanks so much for having me, John.
I can't think of another topic that's grabbed the attention of the public more, as AI seems to be finding its way into so many different facets of our lives. When we talk about AI in MS, what does that look like to you?
Yeah, so I think you're right that AI has kind of permeated almost everything we do. And in order for that to happen, a couple steps had to occur. In order to use AI, you need data, and you need quantitative data. So if you would have thought about where the MS field was previously and where it is now, I think there's two things that have evolved. One is the availability of very rich, large data sets that includes clinical variables, that includes MRI variables, that includes genetic details and variables. And if you put that together with AI, basically what you have is a tool for discovery in MS. And I think that can have applications on two ends. One, on the research end, so that we can actually understand the disease better by applying these artificial intelligence tools to this very large amount of data. And then second, translating those discoveries actually to things that might be beneficial for patients. That latter part is going to be a little harder to do, but I think it's definitely on the horizon.
How might artificial intelligence enhance or be beneficial in analyzing an MRI scan, for instance?
Yeah, that's a great question. So typically what we've done historically or traditionally is we've had a radiologist, so a person, look at an MRI image behind a screen, and they give us what they call radiology reports. Those reports, they indicate this is an MRI. It looks like an MRI of a person who has MS. This is what we think the disease looks like. Mild, moderate, perhaps even severe is kind of the determination they give us. AI has allowed us, on the other hand, to be much more quantitative. The idea is that in order to measure the brain itself, one can do that manually by drawing it, or one can use artificial intelligence tools to actually gather data from an MRI image so that it's not just a radiologist report. We still need those, for sure. But on top of that, AI tools, for example, can teach us something about the brain volume, the cortex, how thick it is, structures within the brain, for example, the thalamus. It can tell us, you know, what's the situation with that. AI tools can also tell us how an MRI is changing from one time point to another. And it can do it with great precision and numerically, quantitatively. So that's a clear example of how actually AI can improve on imaging. I think one of the other things on imaging specifically is that historically what we've done is we've acquired MRI sequences one at a time, and that typically takes a long while. So MRIs typically for our patients vary anywhere from 30 minutes to about an hour. But there are tools now, including tools to develop synthetic MRI, where you can grab data relatively quickly and reproduce the images that you would normally have to wait to get 30, 40 minutes just based on an abbreviated or a smaller version of that same MRI sequence, essentially getting more information for less scan time.
Well, not only getting more information, but it sounds a lot more patient-friendly.
That's correct.
Do you see a scenario where AI improves or changes, hopefully for the better, someone's annual or semi-annual appointment with their neurologist?
Yeah, I think so. You know, in the past when we do MRIs, or, you know, currently when we do MRIs, we talk to patients. What does your MRI look like? What does the, you know, lesion look like? Do you have any new lesions itself? We typically don't talk very much about the measures of how the brain is, for example, losing volume. This is a concept we call brain atrophy. That's not something that's incorporated into clinical practice because it's tedious. We typically do it on the research side of things, and there's some variability in those measures. Now, AI might, at some point, allow us to say, You don't have any new lesions, but for example, your brain volume loss has accelerated, say, in the last 6 months. And that indicates to us that perhaps you're not responding as well to a treatment as you should be, and perhaps you even should need a new treatment. Historically, we've done that with aggregate data. That is, at the group level, we can say medication A versus medication B changes brain volume loss in a certain percentage. What AI probably will help us in the future is drill that down to an individual level. That is not a group effect, but in one person, what does this change in volume, for example, mean? But for me, that's a tangible way of improving a tool that we're already using. You leverage AI, and basically you make it a tool to better have more precise, you know, decision-making processes and be better about selecting medication and monitoring medication.
And that really allows you to tailor that conversation with the patient about them, as opposed to them as perhaps part of a large group.
Correct.
You know, when a lot of people think of AI today, they think of ChatGPT. And some people worry about AI because ChatGPT has been known to be less than accurate on occasion. Obviously, when it comes to healthcare, no one wants an inaccurate diagnosis, although that happens too often today without the help of AI, especially in MS. What would you say to people living with MS who are concerned that their treatment one day will perhaps be managed by Dr. Chat MS?
Yeah, definitely something that we have to be careful about. These are very powerful tools. There is no doubt about it. But I think one of the things that we have to remember is that the data is always going to be what drives what the AI can do with it. And so many times you have to think about, are there any biases in the data that when you're training an AI model, or you're training a computer, for example, to make a decision on any given thing, there is the possibility that that bias contaminates the data. So I think that we're already seeing a little bit of a shift. In the past, when we thought about the science behind AI, a lot of it focused on how to create the AI that makes the new decision process. And that we can do quite well. I think a lot of where the science is moving now is what tools can you use to verify that there's not bias in the data, that the model isn't biased, and that the results that you're producing actually are accurate. I think that's going to be one of the major challenges of AI. I think we're probably better off with AI than without AI, but I think it all has to be done in a careful way, ensuring that there's not significant bias, ensuring that if I, for example, use AI and I've created a decision set in a population that's predominantly North American, for example, that might not apply to a population outside of North America, right?
Right.
So we have to think about these questions and how we can tailor our AI tools to make sure that they really apply to everybody.
Sounds very, very promising, for sure. Dr. Daniel Antoneta, thank you for all you do to improve the lives of people who are living with MS. And thanks so much for talking with me today.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, John.
I'm John Strum, and this Real Talk MS Ectrums Extra has been made possible through a grant from Sanofi.